Well, good morning, church. Man, it's good to be together this morning. Really, really is. It's been such a great day of worship so far. Appreciate Joel and David and Tommy's work in leading our minds to praise and to pray and to partake. And so I'm really, really thankful for that this morning. Yesterday, some of you got to go out to help work on Miss Ondine Stockton's house. And if you haven't ever been to Miss Ondine Stockton's house, she lives in the woods, like way in the woods, completely surrounded by the woods. And our job was to pick up sticks and rake leaves. So if it was a great day, got a lot done, and I'm afraid by tomorrow you'll never, ever see it. Because it is so out there. But I will say that the people who showed up to work, and I would say the men who showed up to work, but Elaine was there, and apparently Elaine is starting a side hustle because she worked me under the deck. I am telling you, good grief. She's a worker, and the guys did okay too. But just a really, really good day. I'm just feeling so blessed to be a part of Forest Mill. In the work we're doing in our community and among one another. And this morning, we even sang the Church of Christ National Anthem this morning. It was beautiful as always, which is Our God, He is Alive. If you're not familiar, that is our national anthem, adopted by all of the churches of Christ across America independently, of course, because we have no affiliation with one another. And anyway, it was among all the other songs, it was also great. So we have been in the Sermon on the Mount. We were kind of working our way through that. And you got to, for me at least, we've got to take that just a little bite at a time. Have you ever had a conversation with someone who, let's just call them brutally honest. That's just probably the politest way to put it. Someone who is just, they're going to tell you exactly what you are doing wrong or precisely how you are screwing things up. You ever had conversations with people like that? I mean, they're good. It's a good thing to know, but it is also a hard pill to swallow because at least my first reaction is to be very defensive and say either you're wrong or no, I'm not doing that or what I'm doing is not wrong. Or I want to push back against that and to get angry and sort of fend it off. But Jesus' Sermon on the Mount is just one right after another, just little snippets of brutal honesty. And Jesus talks about all the stuff that we don't like to talk about. I mean, if you're here last week, you know, I mean, talking about lust, nobody likes to have that conversation, but Jesus dives right in on that. And before that, it was anger, which you know, most of us struggle with at some point in our lives, and Jesus just tells us exactly what we need to hear, and it's exactly what we don't want to hear, though. And this morning is no exception. It is I'll tell you up front, it's going to be a really difficult topic, maybe the most difficult one so far, because it is so sensitive, because it touches so many of us. And so I was, this week, I really kind of wrestled with, do I want to preach this? Do I want to talk about it? No, I really don't. But because Jesus thinks it's important and we are self-proclaimed followers of Him, we're going to try to make our way through it with as much compassion and with as much honesty as we can muster together. So just letting you know, it's going to be a hard sermon, but the point of this sermon is not to make anyone feel beaten up or feel guilty or feel ostracized or singled out. That is not this at all. This is really a sermon of hope in the midst of our brokenness. It's a message of hope, but it deals with a really hard subject. So a few years ago, there was a billboard advertisement for the law firm of Fetman, Garland, and Associates. Since it's in Chicago, they're in Chicago, it targeted some young, wealthy, married couples in Chicago's Gold Coast. really upper end. That's where Chicago's money is. And in that neighborhood, they put up a billboard that just said, "Life's short, get a divorce." There's the actual billboard. And you can see on either side, there are some images of provocative images of men and women. I had to sort of shave the woman off because it was just too racy, really, even to put up there. And they apparently cropped my head out of the picture they took off my Facebook page. But that doesn't bother me. I don't need the credit. But anyway. This was controversy, even in Chicago, you know, big city. This was controversy even there. But the partner in the firm who sort of oversees all this said the sign was supposed to be lighthearted and thought-provoking and not boring like a law firm advertisement. And she insisted that it was not created to trivialize marriage. And in her mind, it was, and this is her quote, "no different than any motivational book that tells you to live your best life." That was her take on this. That's what she was trying to convey. And a lot of people agreed with her philosophy. It was made the message boards on news sites when it would the story spread around. And so there was an ABC message board, and one reader wrote, "I love it. Kudos to the firm and the marketing idea. As an attorney, I'm not offended by this billboard. Frankly, I find it refreshingly honest and insightful." Hey, it's true. If people are unhappy, there are plenty of options out there. Get a divorce and get on with your life. Now, we, as people not in Chicago and probably pretty different philosophical views than many of these attorneys, also understand where they're coming from. Over 2 million couples per year in America divorce. The rate among Christians? Really no better. It's happening. It often happens against the desire of one of the mates. It happens so often that in 48 states, they have established no-fault divorce in order to expedite the system and make it a lot easier. There was an ad in a California newspaper that read, "Divorce, $25, unload that turkey." And I think that's probably a pretty accurate way about most of our society, or accurate description of the way most of our society feels about it. But it's a sad commentary where divorce it's cheapened and even encouraged. So where did we get this attitude? Where did it originate? Well, you'll be happy to know, I guess, that it didn't start with us. We are not the originators of divorce. We are not the ones who made it such a thing. It's been going on for a long time. It was really on the minds in Jesus' day and maybe every day before and since. But certainly we know it was on the minds of Jesus' listeners in his day. The men of Jesus' time in particular were fixated on their ability, their right, hang on to that word, their right to get rid of a woman who didn't please them. So at that time, the husband, the man, had complete, full authority to do that, to just end the marriage when the wife didn't please him. But from the woman's point of view, divorce was pretty brutal. And practically speaking, it was never an option for them to have a divorce or create a divorce. It was just thrust upon them. Maybe that's why Jesus addressed this topic in his best well-known sermon, the Sermon on the Mount. In our society, most everyone has the option. I mean, we've not fared any better than the listeners in Jesus' day. The result has been a lot of broken marriages, a lot of broken homes, a lot of wounded families. And I realize this is a really sensitive topic. My own family has forever been changed and hurt by divorce. My grandparents, aunts, uncles, cousins. One of my cousins, I was the best man in that wedding, and it didn't last just a couple of short years. So I know what it's like. In fact, let's just get this out in the open. Show of hands this morning. If you or someone you have been just loved has been through and been hurt by a divorce? Just show of hands if you or someone you know and love has been hurt by a divorce. That's just about all of us, right? Up front, I want to say that I'm not doing this to single out anyone. Hey, this is not about making you feel guilty. This is not to make you feel bad about the hard choices you've made in your life or the hard path your life has taken. Neither is this about to denounce the evils of all divorces in all cases. To truth be known, I have even counseled couples whose marriage was particularly unhealthy and dysfunctional, that they needed to get as far away from one another as possible because they could not recover in their current marital state. So if that's the case, why are we even going to talk about it? Well, whether your marriage has lasted, or a marriage lasts 10 months or 20 years, the impact of a marriage's disintegration, it's always devastating. And since we've all just admitted this morning how important this topic is to us as a group, we want to listen carefully when Jesus addresses his audience in talking about it. Jesus said, "It has been said, anyone who divorces his wife must give her a certificate of divorce. But I tell you, Jesus tells you that anyone who divorces his wife, except for marital unfaithfulness, causes her to become an adulteress. And anyone who marries the divorced woman commits adultery." Whew. This is a hard teaching. And I'll be the first to admit that it has been, this passage has been misused and abused and twisted and used to be the spear point thrust into the side of hurting people time and again. So it is not easy for us to hear, but it wasn't easy for them to hear in Jesus' day either. When Jesus gave this teaching that divorce as it was practiced, that it was not acceptable, his own disciples, I mean the guys who lived with him every day, followed him everywhere, listened to every sermon he gave, those guys said, if that's how it's going to be between a man and a woman, it's better not to get married. If I can't divorce my wife anytime I want, it's just better not to be married. That was Jesus' disciples' take on this, on Jesus, this issue. According to the rightness of the religious leaders of the day, a man was generally thought to be good if he gave his wife a certificate of divorce, a written certificate of divorce, because then she's got the certificate to prove that she is not married, and she can defend herself. If she's caught alone with another man, she can pull out the certificate to prove, "I'm no longer married, please don't kill me," because that was the charge. If she was caught in adultery, was stoning to death, right? So a written certificate of divorce was about saving this woman's life. She could also meant, if she had the papers, she could be open for another marriage. It also meant, if all else failed, she could now make a living as a prostitute. That's what the certificate of divorce was about. And there was this long-standing disagreement between the interpreters, the rabbis, the teachers of Jesus' day and before him about whether a man was free to divorce his wife for every reason or specific reasons and what those specific reasons might be. And that's the topic of discussion in Matthew 19, that Jesus also talks about marriage and divorce later in the book of Matthew. The Pharisees wanted Jesus to take a hot stand on a controversial issue. So they dragged him into that discussion on that occasion in Matthew 19. And controversial it was indeed, because you've got all these different rabbis with all these different teachings. They wanted Jesus to pick a side and ostracize everybody else. You've got the school of Rabbi Shammai, and he allowed for divorce only on moral grounds. Read adultery there. If one of the spouses was unfaithful, he thought a written certificate of divorce was permissible. You've got the school of Hillel, Rabbi Hillel, and he allowed it really for about any reason. If a wife displeased you, so if your wife burned your food, I mean literally an example. Or another written example we have is if your wife oversalted your food. Guys, you know how frustrating that can be. You could divorce your wife for reasons as small as that. A lesser known school that we have also heard about is Rabbi Akiba. And he allowed for divorce if a husband just saw another woman whose appearance pleased him more. That was also legal grounds for a divorce in his mind. In practice, a woman knew she could be divorced for any reason. That was the reality she lived with, that she could do everything right and still be thrust out. The law as it was practiced favored a husband's slightest whim. Even though the law states in Deuteronomy 22 through 24, it's much more restrictive. It is very restrictive, as was issued through the law in Deuteronomy, but that was not the way it was practiced. And Jesus doesn't forbid divorce absolutely. He just makes it very clear that divorce was never God's intent for women, men and women in marriage. The intent was to forge a relationship deeper than any other relationship you have in your life. Deeper than your relationship with your parents, deeper than your relationship with your children, or any other human relationship. They were to become one flesh, one natural unit, building one life together. Yet Jesus does say divorce is permissible in certain circumstances. Certainly, Jesus allows for the law's exception of uncleanness, and again, it could cover a number of things, but primarily referred to adultery. And that's not to say that adultery is so damaging that a marriage can never survive. Many marriages have survived this very circumstance. In fact, divorce is never required in biblical teaching. There's no circumstance under which Jesus or anywhere in the Old Testament where if your husband or wife does this or does that, you have to get a divorce. If that was the case, you know, God certainly wouldn't have set Hosea in his marriage where his wife was unfaithful time and again, right? So the divorce is never required, but the hardness of the human heart is what ultimately Jesus cites as reason for divorce in the case of adultery. In other words, the ultimate cause of divorce, the ultimate grounds for divorce is human hardness of heart. We might say it's meanness or orneriness. Just bearing in mind, Jesus is dealing with women who could wind up dead or brutally abused if the man was unable to get rid of her. That's the circumstance. That's the hardness of heart. And in Jesus' teaching, it's better for divorce to occur than for this woman's life to be ceaselessly excruciating. So before we start to jump to decisions, Jesus makes it clear what divorce does to people. He states that divorce was never intended by God, that it disrupts the natural unit, it harms the members who go through it for life. No matter how bad it would have been to stay together, it's still going to cause harm when you separate. Marriage means they are no longer two but one flesh, and no matter how difficult it is to be one flesh, it's also going to be difficult to be separated. The arrangement in nature that God established, no human being can change that order. That's God's order. Divorce powerfully disrupts one of the major natural cycles of human existence. Once you're married, you can never be the same. No matter what the reasons, you're just never the same. So no one chooses divorce just because they think it'd be fun to go through. Just because they want to change a pace. It should never be that light. We know a brutal marriage isn't good either. So we have to resist, as Christians, resist the temptation to classify divorce as a special, irredeemable form of wickedness. It's not. Sometimes, all things considered, it's just the best option available. The main point of Jesus' teaching in Matthew 5, the fact that a man or woman in our situation today has gotten a legal or a right divorce, doesn't mean that he or she has done the right thing to be a good person in the relationship. Just because your divorce is legal, whether you're talking about in the world system of law or even in the biblical sense, just because it is legal doesn't mean it's the right thing to do, that you have been the right partner in this marriage. And Jesus is trying to forego that assumption. And so finally, Jesus says that when anyone sends his wife away for any reasons other than adultery, it forces her into adultery. And that's the part that really sort of catches us, right? And that whoever takes this woman as a wife has been also engaging in adultery. And again, this is not forbidding a divorce. It just makes it clear what the effects of this divorce are. So I want to spell this out. And again, this is kind of graphic, but this is what Jesus is saying, because this is the reality he's dealing with. In Jesus' day, the consequences of divorce were devastating for women. Barring few rare exceptions, this woman's life would be ruined. Forever, ever, ever ruined. And essentially, no harm would be done to the man. He might be out a small financial amount, and he may have some bad relationships with his ex's family. But other than that, there's no lasting effect for the man. For the woman, however, there existed a divorced woman had three realistic possibilities. One, they could find a home living with a generous relative, but usually on grudging terms, and then only little more as a servant. So there's one. I could go from being a wife to being a servant. Number two, she might be fortunate enough to find a man to marry her, but even then she would be married as, I hate this term, but that's the way they thought, as damaged goods, seconds. So she lived forever in a damaged, degraded relationship. Or thirdly, she might make a place in the community as a prostitute. Society would then not support a divorced woman to any degree or allow her to support herself in any decent way. Those are the options that she's got, right? That's why Jesus says that to divorce a woman causes her to commit adultery, and to marry her was to commit adultery, because it forever degraded her status and position as a human being. That is what divorce does to the wife in Jesus' day. To not marry again means to grow old with no children, no social position, and be seen as a perpetual failure in your community. To marry meant to live in a degraded relationship for the rest of her life, and few husbands would ever let her forget it. And the very word adultery, as with the phrase adultery in the heart in the previous verses here, when Jesus talked about lust, points out the degraded sexual condition that was sure to be the result of a divorce. So that's the conditions Jesus was dealing with. That's what Jesus was addressing. The question for us this morning is, what do we do about it? And I would submit that based on Jesus' teachings, that we as a church need to cultivate our attitudes toward divorce. And these are three attitudes I think that we would benefit from. One, we need to hold a very high ideal of marriage. This is not our standard, this is God's standard. Even when it's not popular, we are to hold high God's ideal of marriage. There was a study done of divorced couples who had preschool children. And it shows how after a year of divorce, 60% of the men and 73% of women feel that they made a mistake and they should have tried harder in their marriage. After 1 year of being divorced, more than half of men and women felt like, it's so hard now, I wished I'd tried harder. But we're human beings, right? We've got limited knowledge. We don't know how hard it's going to be being out there with kids. We have no idea how much anguish we're going to go through or stress it's going to cause, but God does. And so he warns us the way any loving father would, hey, I know this looks like a good route, but it's going to be really hard on you. Divorce is presented as really alluring. It's going to offer all this freedom. It's going to offer all this happiness. That's the promise of divorce in our society. And God says it is not all that. In fact, it's often even more difficult than remaining married. So just hold high the ideal of marriage. Number two, we as a church need to acknowledge that there are some complex situations out there. Really complicated. Because people's hearts were hard, Moses permitted them to get a divorce as an accommodation to the innocent. And people's consciences today are seared just like they were in Moses' day, just like they were in Jesus' day. What are you going to tell a person whose mate is repeatedly unfaithful, habitually unfaithful, or whose spouse is physically or verbally or emotionally abusive, or who threatens the life of the children? Are you going to say, yeah, you got to stay in this marriage? I know of a circumstance in a church in this state of a husband and wife, and the wife's mental health degraded to the point that she became homicidal, tried to take the life of herself and her children. Fortunately, it didn't succeed. She was incarcerated. And the husband, because of the traditional teaching on marriage and divorce, remained married to her because he did not want to force her to commit adultery and did not want to commit adultery himself, remained married to her to the point that she was being released from prison and was now going to have full custody of the children, or joint custody of the children, along with the husband, because he never divorced her. The husband goes to the eldership of his congregation and says, brothers, I don't know what to do. My kids are scared to death. They're, you know, much older now, and they can make their decision, but they don't want to have a relationship with this woman. Is it okay if I divorce her, this lady? I've been married to her all these years. And the elders couldn't forbid it. They didn't expressly say, go do it, but they also couldn't say no, so he got a divorce just to save his children. And then years later, when he met a wonderful woman, a widow, who had her own children and wanted to get married, they said, no, you can't do it. If you want to marry this woman, that'll make you an adulterer. That's how this passage has been used and twisted and broken. But we've got to admit, there are much more complicated situations out there that people are going through, problems and struggles that we just don't know about. And we need to practice acceptance of those people who are already divorced or who are presently going through a divorce. We need to show love and acceptance for those people. And even in the cases where someone has acted wrongly, when they are the one who led to the demise of their marriage, we need to be open enough to extend them forgiveness. Because no matter who is right and wrong, and I hesitate to use those terms in the context of a relationship, but no one emerges from a broken marriage unscathed. In that sense, everyone is victimized. Everyone becomes a victim because it hurts everyone. And that's something that you and I can identify with. Because, like it or not, we've been victims too. Sometimes we're the victims of other people. Sometimes we're the victims of situations and circumstances that are just thrust upon us by the world. But all the time, We are victims of our own bad decisions. How many times have I gotten myself in a pickle? How many times have I said or done something and I would be like, I would just do anything if I could take this back. If I could, you know, unring that bell, put that toothpaste back in the tube. But it's an impossibility. Now, just as in Jesus' day, we make decisions with consequences and have no idea what we're doing. We would love to not be the victims, but we're the ones who cause the harm on ourselves. Praise God that the good news of Jesus Christ, the gospel of Jesus Christ, doesn't just make allowances for broken people like you and me. Jesus specifically targets you and me in all our brokenness, knowing exactly how awful we have been, exactly the depths to which we've sunk, exactly the depths to which we will sink in the future. Jesus knows all of that, and he still reaches out and says, you are a part of the kingdom of God. The household of God is open to you. You are going to be a son. You are going to be a daughter. Yes, 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 I know. You don't have to tell me all the details. You can confess and I will listen, but I'm extending forgiveness. You don't have to keep bringing that stuff up. I already know. And he invites us in. He draws us in. Jesus does everything but beg us. And in fact, if you read some of the Gospels, it looks exactly like he's begging us to be a part of that, to escape from the victimization of ourselves and our own sins, from bringing harm to one another and bringing harm to ourselves. Jesus knows there's a better way of life because he is the author of life. Jesus knows there's a way to salvation because he's the author of salvation. And whether you have been a Christian for a month or some of us 50 years or more, We know exactly what it's like to mess that up too. And still, Jesus says, come. So this morning, church, I want this to be a message of hope, because that's what Jesus was offering. Remember that Jesus' listeners had gone through broken marriages themselves, and still he says, come. This morning, if we can pray over you to offer you encouragement or forgiveness, to lift you up, or to pray with you over a specific circumstance, we want to do that. We want you to know that you are a part of this body, and there's nothing you can do to turn us away any more than you can turn away the hand of Jesus. So if there's anything we can do for you this morning, won't you come as we stand and as we sing?